You're listening to the Mindful Mama podcast, episode number 376. Today, it's a special listen again episode about raising good humans. Welcome to the Mindful Mama podcast. Here, it's about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. At Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have, and when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm your host, Hunter Clark Fields. I help smart, thoughtful parents stay calm so they can have strong, connected relationships with their children. I've been practicing mindfulness for over 20 years. I'm the creator of Mindful Parenting, and I'm the author of the best-selling book, Raising Good Humans, a mindful guide to breaking the cycle of reactive parenting and raising kind, confident kids. Hey, welcome back to the Mindful Mama podcast. I'm so glad you're here. Listen, if you haven't yet done so, please hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you've gotten any value from this podcast, please do me a favor. Go over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review. It just helps the podcast grow more. It takes 30 seconds. I hugely appreciate it. Now, in just a moment, you're going to hear a conversation with me and my dear friend, Carla Naumburg, from when my book, Raising Good Humans, which in the last 2 years has kind of become a runaway bestseller. It's been translated into 6 languages. It's done way better than I ever expected it to do. We're going to talk about the book. It's our conversation from December 2019 when it came out. And you're going to find out what not to say to your kids, the real truth on how to stay calm, and why raising children is a spiritual practice. So I hope you enjoy this conversation.
Are you struggling with kids fighting, yelling, and more despite listening to the podcast and reading all the books? Parenting can be so overwhelming and exhausting. You know, I see you and I have something that will help. Mindful Parenting SOS. I'm offering free live mindful parenting sessions starting Monday, May 6th. Basically, live mindful parenting lessons that you'd normally have to pay for. So if you struggle with getting your kids to listen, tantrums, misbehavior, and feeling the guilt of yelling at your kid, then you should definitely get your spot in Mindful Parenting SOS. I'll be there to answer your questions in person, and if you can't make it, we will have replays available. Don't wait to get your spot now. It's free. Go to mindfulmamamentor.com/SOS to register. That's mindfulmamamentor.com/SOS. I can't wait to see you there.
Hunter, thank you so much for coming on your own podcast. I'm so today.
Your Terry Gross voice is fabulous, Carla. Thank you. And it's not an upcoming new book anymore. It is out as of the release of this podcast. So,
How are you? You have a book out. Are you breathing? Are you okay? I have some mindfulness techniques that might help you stay calm. You should consider trying them.
Okay. We'll take notes. I'll take notes later. Yeah, it's a little crazy. I don't know how I feel because actually I'm not quite there yet.
So exciting. Okay. Before we get started on all these deep, insightful, incredibly thoughtful and thrilling questions I'm going to ask you, in case people like their radios suddenly shut off or their podcast players suddenly shut off because we're actually in the 21st century, where can people buy your books or pre-order or buy them or whatever?
Oh my gosh. So you can go to raisinggoodhumansbook.com and there are links there to buy it from, you know, Amazon or IndieBound or wherever. And hopefully you can find it at your local bookstore.
Yay. All right. So, you know, when I read that little introduction there, and I totally had my NPR voice going on, it was awesome. I was thinking about everything you do, Hunter, and it blows me away. So you're a coach and you teach these courses and you have this membership program and your podcast and you put this awesome stuff on social media that totally makes me think and pause and actually put down my phone because I shouldn't be staring at it anyways. And you have this great newsletter, like you're doing all the things. And you have, if I'm not mistaken, like 2 kids and a life and a husband and all that stuff. So why did you write a book? I mean, you already have these amazing ways of getting the news out into the world, and writing a book is a ton of work and it's not always fun. So like, what were you thinking, lady? Tell me, why did you write this book?
Well, that's a good question. I didn't know how much work it was. Maybe that's why I decided to write a book, because I was like, I could do this. I've always been one of those, you know, the smart kids in the class, getting the grades, achieving the things. And, you know, I was always a good student and I always liked, I've always been really literary, really into reading, really into writing. I read a lot. Like if I need to escape, I'm in a book. And I kind of realized, the reason why I wrote this book is really that I saw that there was this world, this sort of parenting world, and there's all these things that are out there and there's all this information out there that's really wonderful and valuable and good. And I saw that there were sort of these, seemed like to me, there were two camps that weren't really talking or paying attention to each other. And so I was very much, I spent a lot of time in the world of that mindfulness camp, because I'd been studying about it since I was a teenager because I desperately needed it. And I had learned a lot about meditation and mindfulness and all of those things. And then as my kids became alive, frankly, and then started to talk back to me and all those things, I started to dive into this sort of parenting world and how can I do this better? And I'm really doing a terrible job at this, so let me do this better. And what I saw is that in the mindfulness world, the kind of mindset was like, okay, if we can just calm down our stress response, we can calm down and move slower and be more patient, then everything's gonna be fine and you're just dandy.
Excuse me for laughing. Go ahead. Continue, please.
And then in the parenting world, this sort of mindset of like, well, if you can just say the right things, if you can just respond the right way, you know, right in air quotes, then everything's just going to be fine and you're going to be okay. And what I really like was frustrated with in sort of the parenting world was like, okay, every single instruction starts with step one, pause, but how do you do that? I'm losing my brain. And then
just stay then, calm. It'll be fine. Just be calm. It's easy.
Just be calm. Just approach them in a calm way. Great. How do you do that? And then, you know, and then in that mindfulness world, it was like, well, once you're calm, you'll just kind of miraculously know what to say. And that was complete BS, because then I would say something that was like something kind of maybe a little unskillful that my parents might have said to me. And then when I was a kid, and then it would be my toddler would be like a time bomb, like exploding again to the words I was saying. So I saw that one without the other was not enough. That in the parenting, in that communication world, they really needed a lot of this information about step one, how to calm your stress response, how to like have more self-awareness, how to get to that place of more awareness so you can respond thoughtfully. And then in the mindfulness world, they needed, you know, mindfulness wasn't enough. You know, you really needed those skillful communication. So I saw that mindfulness and skillful communication, they needed to come together. And so that's really what Raising Good Humans does, is bring these two things together. And that's what I see as like the wings we need to fly, or like we need to be able to calm down our stress response, have more self-awareness and kindness within, and that we need to be able to communicate better to our children in a more effective way to our children.
Hunter, that is amazing. And so many kudos to you, because one of the things I love about your book is you jam so much information in there, but it's not 800 pages long, which is great because I can't read 800 pages, but you do it in a way that feels really accessible and readable. And I was like drawn into the book and I just kept reading. It was awesome. And you really tackled both of these hard issues. Cause like in my most recent book, I didn't tackle the issue about like, what do you actually do once you're calm? I was basically like, hey parents, here's how to not lose it. And P.S. good luck with the rest of it. So I'm very thrilled and happy. And as a parent who loves these kind of books and as a mindfulness practitioner, I'm so grateful that you wrote this book, because I need it. We all need it. So
Carla's book is wonderful, by the way, and you should get it. How to Stop Losing Your Beep at Your Kids.
Guys, really what this podcast is going to be is a little love fest between me and Hunter talking about how great our books are. So just enjoy that. Enjoy that. But listen, Hunter, look, one of the things I love about you and your podcast and your book is how honest and relatable you are. And, you know, usually when I think of like yoga mamas, I'm like, oh my God, they're skinny and perfect and calm all the time. And they bake their own food and never make processed food and whatever. But the point is, you don't do that. Maybe you do that, but you're also honest and real and authentic. And you open the book with a very authentic moment, which is this memory that I think many of your readers and listeners can relate to, which is you like crying on the floor after you've lost it with your kids, right? I think you're out in the hallway and you've just lost it. And I've cried after I've lost it, absolutely. And so, but now I don't think you're crying in the hallway as much anymore, right? I'm hoping.
No, I don't cry in the hallway as much.
Although it's okay. It's okay if you do. We're having a lot of compassion here. It's okay if you do. But really, I'd love to hear about some of the changes you've made in your life and your parenting style that I think are reflected in this book, right? But what are some of the changes you've made in your life and your parenting since that moment that maybe readers and listeners could learn from?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was like a moment that was among a series of moments, like being in a puddle in the hallway. I don't know why I was always like in the hallway, but I was always in the hallway, like crying because I felt like such a dummy for messing up my children. Since then, I really could either be subsumed by this sense of like I'm failing, or I could take this and say, okay, I have to learn from this. This is my teacher. Really, it was like my anger, like my temper. And so I had to learn from my temper and see what it had to teach me. And really what I had to go back into, really dive into my mindfulness more and kind of bring that practice more into my daily life, kind of take the practices of, you know, mind just awareness without responding into my daily life. And so what I really, really worked on was calming down my temper. And what helped me with that, and it was interesting because the skillful communication, the sort of language and the mindfulness practices would weave back and forth in my life. So the practice in mindfulness of like noting your feelings, it is also very much one in the skillful communication practices of like acknowledging out loud what you were feeling. So that piece would start to help me reduce my temper a little bit earlier. I would start to have more awareness of like, oh, this is happening again. I need to take care of myself. I need to take a break. And so I started to become calmer. I had started to yell a lot less. I'm not like a robot. I'm still yell at my kids sometimes. And but then as I started to be able to see, oh, okay, I'm able to kind of like make some progress. I'm able to like make some incremental bit by bit improvements in that area, then I was able to really start to respond more skillfully to my kids. So for instance, I would start to like frame my requests of my child really more as requests. So what I used to think of as requests were really like orders and demands. And I didn't realize that. I had to kind of like look at that and say, oh, my child, she doesn't like this because I'm basically like ordering her about all the time. And no one likes to be ordered all the time. So I had to kind of understand my language. And so what started to happen is it got a little easier. I started to also start to let go of some of the problems that weren't really mine to hold. You know, if my kid had a problem and she had big upset feelings, that was okay. Even though like my initial before working on this response was like, oh my God, my kid has these big upset feelings. This is unacceptable. Like that was a big feeling I had because that was kind of the message I was given as a kid was that it made my parents so mad. And so, or mostly my dad, I love you, Dad, so mad that it felt unacceptable. And I started to say, oh, okay, she can have these feelings. And so that was less of a problem for me. And what happened is these things started to, what was nice about using these tools and using these sort of communication skills that didn't involve like punishment and things like that was that my child started to resent me and push against me less because there was less to push against. And things actually started to get better. You know, like it was like kind of snowballed a little easier and easier as time went on because, she felt less resentment. So therefore she resisted me less. So therefore it became easier. And I, you know, I would go through waves of like having to learn this lesson and seeing her, talk to her, my youngest daughter, to see her talk to her sister in some kind of unskillful way and say, oh, that's what that sounds like. Now I know what's going on. And I'd have to work on that way of communicating. And it was really like a bit by bit over time where I'd like kind of work on something and do better with something. And then I'd even say, hey, hold on, let me do a do-over. This is actually what I mean to say. And I would practice and I would get it wrong. And my child, there would be a lot of back and forth, but over time, very imperfectly implementing all the strategies I talk about in Raising Good Humans, it did get easier and easier and easier. And actually, my daughter's going on 13 now, my oldest daughter. And I was really afraid that when the beginning, I was really afraid that I was going to be messing up our relationship for life. I knew that when I was 14, you know, like I ran away from home to friends' houses. I had huge battles with my father again and again and again because I was rebelling against the parenting techniques he was kind of using at me, this like do what I say because I say it kind of stuff. And I can really see now that the other day she apologized to me and then she like into me. I know, she like leans into me and she wants to be close. Like we still have this strong relationship. You know, it's pretty awesome. I feel really grateful that I feel like I've kind of been able to transform this generational pattern, really. Ugh.
We are supported by Cozy Earth bedding products that will transform your sleep. I mean, I know, like, we get some sleep deprivation sometimes as parents. There is a study, did you know about the study that found that 7 in 10 parents get an average of 3 hours of sleep a night in the baby's first year? That's crazy. Parents, we deserve to have quality sleep, and I know how. Cozy Earth bedding is temperature regulation. It has superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave, has quality and longevity. All the products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. Cozy Earth bedding is built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of parenthood. Incorporating Cozy Earth products into your sleep care routine, including their incredibly soft loungewear as well, can enhance your sleep quality and your overall wellness. Treat yourself to ultimate comfort with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear and prioritize your self-care and sleep health. You deserve it. Head over to CozyEarth.com and use promo code MINDFUL35 for an exclusive 35% off. Soft as a mother's touch. Cozy Earth wishes you a happy Mother's Day. I want to tell you about a great podcast that you should check out, especially if you ever deal with any school system, which you probably do. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortubé, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. And this season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP and busts common myths about special education. So I checked out the episode on the difference between IEPs and 504 plans because my daughter Maggie uses a 504 plan and it was really, really helpful. It went over all the differences, which one's better, how to get them, different myths and what your rights are, all kinds of different things that you should understand if your child may need extra help in education through an IEP or a 504 plan. The tone is super helpful, friendly, and smart. I highly recommend you check it out. To listen to Understood Explains, just search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's it. Understood Explains.
And you know, Hunter, there's so much that I love about what you just said. And the one thing that I think you said, well, you said many good things, but one thing you said that was so important that I want listeners to hear that quite frankly sort of sucks, but is honest and true, is that this was not something you fixed overnight. It was not something you changed overnight, and it's an ongoing process. And look, if I had a magic wand, that would not be the case. We would fix everybody overnight. Not that people really need fixing. Let me say that we would transform our sort of unskillful habits and patterns. Jeez, my mindfulness lingo. And But I want parents and listeners to hear that so that they know that if they wake up tomorrow and repeat the same habits and patterns and then repeat them the next day, and then maybe the next day it gets a little bit better. That's how it happens. That's how it happened for me. That's how it happens for you. That's how it happens for all of us. So, you know, if anybody's like, oh, I should just wake up tomorrow and be awesome. Well, you will wake up tomorrow and be awesome, and you'll still make some mistakes, and that's okay too.
I'm so really glad you pointed that out, because one of the things that I was so, that like made me so nervous when my daughter was young was this whole idea, like we get sort of this message. There's some message about like if you, the ages of 3 and under are like these really important ages where they're and I would just be like,
guttural sound of complete annoyance.
Oh, and it would just like, I would just be like, oh my God, I'm ruining my child for life. And I really want to say that that's not true. Like, actually, that's not true. Like, yeah, your kid might absorb some unskillful habits, but everybody is going to. Like, you can't get out of this, like, growing up a human thing into, like, you're not going to make your kid into a perfect human being, and no one is.
I am, Hunter. I am. Except, not anybody else but me.
Except Carla will. And it didn't even, you know, it doesn't matter like when you start to transform things, but it does take a long time. But it was funny because I taught my mindful parenting course a lot in person at locally. And this one woman came and she took it and she was a grandmother. She was taking care of her 6-year-old son, grandson, which was really sweet. And I thought that was really wonderful. And then she, at the end, she talked to me and she said that she had healed her relationship with her adult daughter using the tools and that are in raising good humans. And I felt like, yes, because it's not like there's this point where you're like, oh, I've messed up. I've made some mistakes. So I just give up now and it's too late. You know, like that's a myth. It's never too late to start to transform our habits and heal our relationships.
Amen. And you know, it's like I saw there's occasionally like this parenting meme that makes the rounds on social media that's like, you only get one shot at this. Like, your kids are only this age for this long. You only get one shot. And I'm like, that is freaking horrible. Do not like, what? I just want to go stick my head in the toilet or something. I don't know why I said that, but like, it's horrible. It's like, no, every day, God willing, we get another chance. Like, we always have another chance to begin again, to bring that new attitude, to try again, to forgive ourselves. So if you see that meme, just thumbs down. I don't know. Is there a thumbs down? Is that a thing?
It's make not- the little angry face.
Yeah. Be like, I don't like your meme, but do it in a compassionate way, please. On Mindful Mama podcast, we are very compassionate. All right. Look, can we please look, this is one of my favorite topics and your listeners might feel like I'm doing the dead horse thing with this, but we need to talk about self-compassion because this is big. It's not easy for most of us and we got to keep hearing about it and keep talking about it. So you have this whole chapter on self-compassion. It's called Practicing Compassion. It begins with you. And I think by you, you mean the reader, right? And so, and when I first learned about self-compassion, I thought it was the hokiest, cheesiest thing I'd ever heard of. I couldn't deal with it. I was like, Stuart Smalley, Saturday Night Live, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, gosh darn it, people like me. And I was like, peace out, I'm not doing this. And years later, this one is the game changer for me. Like, self-compassion is the most, I would say, important and effective practice of my parenting life. And so I want to know what it looks like for you. I want to know, first of all, I want you to tell the orange metaphor, because this is my favorite metaphor that you use. So I want to hear the orange metaphor in this. And I want you to give the listener a snapshot into a moment in your parenting life where self-compassion comes in.
Okay. All right. So I will share the orange metaphor, which I steal blatantly from Wayne Dyer, who's a wonderful, amazing teacher. And he taught it like this. And he just would ask this question, which is so clear and simple, is like, when you squeeze an orange, what comes out? Of course, juice comes out of an orange, right? But you know, it's not lemon juice, it's not pomegranate juice, it's orange juice. And the point is that it is what is inside is what comes out when we're squeezed. And when life squeezes us, and parenting will squeeze you, what is inside is what comes out. And so we can think that it's so frustrating because we were taught in this culture that, like, you know, we should be self-sacrificing. We should just give everything to other people, especially women, I guess is what I'm saying. And we think that I can just give all to my children. I can always be super kind to my children. I can always be really gentle. And that's just not true. If you're like a mean ass BITCH inside, like, it's just not true. Like, if you're like that voice inside, when you make a misstep or a mistake, is harsh and mean, eventually that's going to come out. You live with your kids like a day in and day out for years. So eventually that's going to come out when you're squeezed.
For some of us, it's like every 5 minutes. It's not eventually. No, but the point is so well taken, Hunter, that if we're sitting around thinking, and for years I thought this, I am a terrible parent. I'm awful at this. I'm screwing up my kids. Like, those are negative, yucky thoughts. And when my kids were squeezing me, that's what came out. And it all changed with self-compassion. So what does that look like for you? How does self-compassion show up in your life and in your parenting?
Yeah. And I used to say some of the same things to myself. And we have to look at, like, what happens when we're not being self-compassionate. So, like, when we, you know, lose it at our kids and then we start to be harsh and mean to ourselves, like, oh, I'm a terrible parent. I'm terrible. I'm crap. All that stuff. We start to be awful to ourselves. Is that helpful? No, like, it actually kind of leaves you the way I was in the very beginning of that book, like in a puddle of tears in the hallway, always in the hallway. But it leaves you feeling really
put helpful. A couch in the hallway, be more comfortable. I should put couch.
But yeah, it leaves you in the sense of helplessness. And this is actually research they've done. So I talk about the research that Kristen Neff did from podcast, I think it was 87. She talks about it. Anyway, Kristen Neff from University of Austin has actually researched this along with others. And they talk about how actually when we are judgmental and when we are mean to ourselves and we have this harsh inner voice, it actually makes us less able to kind of go out and grow and change and do things, because the process of growing and changing and doing things involves making mistakes. And if you make a mistake and your inner voice is like mean and harsh and punishing, you're not going to want to step outside that comfort zone. It's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller, that teeny tiny little comfort zone. You're not going to want to do the difficult things it takes to grow and change and become a better person. But if you practice self-compassion, I'll talk about what that looks like in my own life, but you think about that, like the voice in your head is actually a little kinder. It's a softer landing. It's not so scary to make a mistake because it's okay. You're human. And then you can actually take steps and grow and change a little bit more. And so for me, what it looked like was I had to see that voice. You know, I had to see, like, oh, this is how I'm talking to myself. I had to kind of like have the self-awareness to understand, like, this is what I'm saying to myself, and is this helpful? And I started to look at the work of, like, Sharon Salzberg, talking about loving kindness and mm-hmm. how self-compassion and loving kindness, they are forms of affection that you can actually practice and grow and cultivate, and what you practice grows stronger. And so, you know, as I remember, like, feeling really upset, first telling myself I'm a terrible parent, and then, like, okay, splashing my face with some cold water, taking some deep breaths, clearing the snot, and saying, okay, this sucks. This is hard. Practicing to offer myself some kind words, you know, okay, this is hard. And it felt really weird, felt really awkward, but I remember kind of doing that gesture of touching my hand to my heart, and they, you know, that gesture of touch is really healing for the body, and saying, okay, this is hard, this sucks, this feels really awful right now, and What can I do? What's the next best thing I can do? And just that softening of like my own reaction to myself allowed me to then reconnect with my child rather than just spiral down and spiral down and spiral down. And so it became a real practice that I started to bring in my life in daily. And I would practice it. Of course, the thing about these practices that you and I talk about all the time, Carla, is that you just can't do it just in that crappy moment.
But I only want to do it in the crappy moment. It's hard to practice and I'm tired and I have lots of stuff to do.
Yeah, but we have to practice. We have to practice
all the time.
We get to practice. We do. We get to practice all the time. But it's like something you just have to, it's like, you know, you're just training your brain to think in a little bit of a different way. And it takes like daily, you know, regular practice in the not stressful, hard, challenging moments to be able to do that in the hard moments.
Yeah. And one, you mentioned Sharon Salzberg, who's amazing. And if you have a chance to read her books or hear her speak, you should do that. And she talks about just walking down the street in New York City, repeating to herself the phrases of the metta meditation of, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be safe, may I live with ease. And if there's ever a place where we need to practice kindness, it's when you're walking down the street in New York City. But yeah, so, and so you talked about like this, giving yourself a softer landing. And I love that phrase. I haven't thought of that before. And I really love it because sometimes it really does feel like in parenting that we're falling on our faces. And the idea to have this like softer landing and it's not such a crash is amazing. Go ahead.
I was going to say it just like, the way you underline self-compassion, I think is so important because it's true. Like we think, We have this sort of idea that judgment is going to be helpful, but the truth is it's not. And the truth is we think, oh, if I can just say all the right things, that's going to, you know, I'm just going to skip to chapter whatever in Raising Good Humans and skip all the front parts and go to what do I say? And I'm going to say all the right things and that's going to make it better. It's not. The truth is you're going to fall on your face. You're going to make mistakes. And life is going to be hard. Like there are so many moments where life is going to be really, really hard. And you have to have, it's such a nurturing thing to have those practices. Because I mean, for me, life is hard sometimes on a regular basis. Like it's hard to like do a lot of different things. And so to have that practice is, it's so, so foundational and so essential. And you know, I've had people share with me that they have used that loving kindness practice in various ways. I had a woman write to me about using the loving kindness practice that she learned through me when her mother was dying and going through this incredible difficulty. And she said she, you know, those words helped her find a way. And just, you know, may I be peaceful, may I be safe, may I be healthy, whatever that is, and may you be peaceful, may you be safe, may you be healthy. It just reminds us to continue to focus in that direction as much as we can.
Oh, I love that. And sometimes I have a little internal loving kindness meditation going on when I really want to throttle my daughters. And it, I'll be like, may I not kill you right now? May I be peaceful? May I not like bite your head off? And it starts out in this almost weird passive aggressive way because I'm so pissed and I can't pull it together. But then I can get into that vibe and it really does help me not lose it with them. It's very, very powerful. I love that you have this whole chapter. And the thing is, you're right. Like the more we practice it on a daily basis, the easier it comes in those really hard moments. So I want to jump to a different part of the book. It's actually my favorite line in the book. I love everything about it, and I'm going to read it to you, and I need you to explain it. So it's these two sentences. You say, want some major personal growth? 6 months with a preschooler can be more effective than years alone on a mountaintop. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about, Hunter? 6 months alone with a preschool and I'm going to end up like Bonkerville, right? Like exhausted, cranky, can't talk in normal sentences, only know the words to like all of Doc McStuffin's friends, don't know anything useful, like only eating macaroni and cheese, forgot what real vegetables taste like, using words like potty when I'm talking to grown adults. So how does 6 months with a preschooler, like, I think that would just turn my, like alone with a preschooler, my brain would just be mush. So explain to me how time spent with young children is a catalyst for major personal growth. I know the answer, but I actually want to hear you say it. What are you talking about?
All right. And I do want to say, it doesn't say alone with a preschooler, but six months with a preschooler. Because no, honestly, I would worry about one's sanity. If you were alone with a preschooler for 6 months, it would be very, very, very challenging.
I actually don't think we should be left for 5 minutes in the preschooler. I think no adult should have to suffer through that. But explain to me. Yeah, I added in the alone for dramatic effect. Thank you for that. Explain to me, though, how you see time with our children as catalysts for personal growth.
Hey there. I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
I mean, yeah. So the truth is, it's really either going to drive you crazy or you're going to learn from it, right? And that's the thing. Like when I think about like someone who says, I'm going to, you know, growth or, you know, zen or die, and they go off to Thailand. I don't know. They go off to Thailand and they go to a monastery and they say, I need some help. And, you know, I picture like sort of the zen monk, like whapping them over the head, you know, helping them to wake up. It's sort of a story in those traditions that there's a little bit of whacking with a something. Anyway, but the point is that they're saying like, wake up, like, here are your issues. Here's this issue to work on. Here's this issue to work on. And preschoolers and kids are constantly showing us, here's this issue to work on. Here's this issue to work on. Here's this issue.
A little rude of them, quite frankly, in all, a little rude.
Yes. They're constantly like, you kind of think like, I mean, the truth is like you go through your adult life before you have kids and you don't have anybody who's like provoking you to yelling and anger, like in your regular adult life. Like it's all pretty chill actually, comparatively. And then you get into—
Nobody's pooping their pants in front of you. That's not a thing people do either. You're right. It's a good point.
And then you don't even realize how these things, the reactions, these things are going to provoke in you. So those, what we want to, instead of saying like, this is a huge problem and it's something that's horrible and terrible. Instead, if we can kind of change our mindset to say, okay, this reaction in me, bingo, this is something I need to practice with. This is something I need to offer some self-compassion towards, you know, there's something here, like there's some healing maybe I have to do from my childhood, or there's just some place in me where this is like a big thing for me that I can feel it so much in my body. So instead, basically it's just taking these really big challenges and, or whatever size challenge, and working with it and saying, okay, bringing these attitudes of mindfulness and curiosity to that challenge. Okay, why is this such a big reaction to me? How can I sit with this? What does it feel like in the body? And starting, it sort of grows and expands your self-awareness. It grows your loving awareness as you can start to see, oh, this is such a difficult thing for me. Then it naturally can give you more compassion for all the other parents who are struggling too. I mean, before you had kids, you probably judged that mom in Walmart for...
Oh, judge the crap out of her. Absolutely. I was like, my kids are never eating nuggets. And now... Well, anyways, go ahead, Hunter. What were you saying? Keep talking, Hunter.
Yes. So just kinds of, it expands our awareness and expands our compassion, and just take those things as your teachers. Those are your teachers. What do you have to learn from them?
Oh, it is, you speak the truth, and it is both one of the most helpful sort of like shifts in perception I ever had about parenthood. That like, oh, this is an opportunity for me to get better. And it's also incredibly annoying because sometimes I don't want to do personal growth. And so I think sometimes like we give ourselves a break, but then we come back to this. And when we can get curious and have compassion and do all these things, you know, the beginner's mind that you talk about in the book, do all these things, parenting gets easier and it becomes more fun and less stressful. But look, I'm thinking about the parents who are listening to this and they're like, I don't know, tired and overwhelmed and stressed, and they've got like a million things bouncing around in their brains, you know, dinosaur names or facts about Frozen and Minecraft, or what are they going to make for dinner? Did they call the dentist? So I want them to come away from this podcast with like a key takeaway point, an idea from your book that you think is really important, really useful, really helpful, or just that you're really jazzed about. You're like, yeah, this is great. What are those, like, what is that one idea or lesson or practice or insight from Raising Good Humans that we can leave our listeners with today that they can sink their tired little teeth into until they can get their hands on the book and sit down and read it?
Well, I think probably just like I would probably pull out self-compassion as the most important thing, because it really does sustain us in so many difficulties for so long. So, but we've already talked about that. And so I just want to kind of highlight that that is so powerful and so important and can be practiced and can be learned, and you can do it. And even though it feels weird, you can do it. And I would encourage the listener, you know, I would encourage you, if you're exhausted and you want to just, you know, everything is crazy, I would encourage you to look at where you can slow down. Look at where you can slow down, maybe, you know, in your schedule, but maybe in just this moment, like where can you slow down? Maybe if you're listening to this as you drive in your car, when you step out of your car, you can just even walk slowly to your next destination. If you can slow down your steps, you can slow down, you know, the agenda, just start to slow it down. And that gives us the space to have more awareness of what's happening for us in our hearts and our minds, and to be able to see more clearly what's happening for our kids and their hearts and minds. And we don't have to move so fast. We can start to, I mean, literally walking slowly from the car can be really healing. You know, my kids used to go to this Montessori school that's just like about a block away from my house. Mm-hmm. And I used to drop them off and then literally run home because I had 3 hours. And so I would dash home. Right. And at one point I realized like I was so sped up, and that I had to get through the list and do the things. And I was in this mode of like, I have to get through the list and do the things and get all the things right. And then maybe at some future point, I'll be able to relax. And the truth is, when we do that, you have been practicing sped up, get it all done, efficiency brain, get go, go, go. And so when you get to that point, you can't even relax. So I started to practice mindful walking from the school home. And it literally took me an extra like 4 minutes or like two, you know, it was such a minuscule amount of time that it changed. It wasn't even that much more time. And then when I got home, I was relaxed. I was thinking more clearly. And then when I got there, I wasn't in such a hurry. Our kids don't move at the same pace of life that we do. And we can start to slow down. And when you have some space in your life, then you can start to practice, you know, all of these little practices that are bit by bit changes over time. You can start to bring those into your life, even when life is full. You know, you start to notice, oh, if I can walk slowly, even when my life is crazy and full, maybe I can just sit on this bench and breathe quietly for 60 seconds and do a meditation practice, even though my life is full. You know, there are ways to start as we start to just bring some spaciousness into our days. There becomes room and space to because it's all the stuff. There's a saying I'll quote here from Marie Forleo, which I really love, her new book, Everything is Figureoutable. And that phrase I think is really apropos here, because if we start to make space, we can see that it's everything is figureoutable. Like strengthening our relationships with our kids is figureoutable. Doing it without punishment, it's figureoutable. There are tools. Slowing ourselves down, reducing our reactivity and our yelling, you can totally figure that out. You can do this, you can practice it, and you can learn it, because what you practice grows stronger. So,
Hunter, you mentioned that everything is figureoutable, including strengthening our relationship with our kids, figuring out how to talk to them in challenging moments, figuring out how to reduce our own reactivity. I wish there was a book for all that. Do you have a recommendation of a book that would help, you know, harried, stressed parents figure out how to stay calm and communicate empathically and lovingly with their kids?
Yes, I think I do. So yeah, seriously, if you're a listener of this podcast, you're listening to this episode and some of what we've said has resonated with you, you know, I invite you to get the book, Raising Good Humans. You can go to raisinggoodhumansbook.com or wherever you find books. And it's important to, you know, take these. Books are such a valuable resource that you can go back to again and again. You can put by your bedside, you can return to, and there's a lot in there. And I'd love for you to buy the book, review it on Amazon, and then connect. You can get some book bonuses that I'm putting up. So, raisinggoodhumansbook.com.
Hunter, thank you so much for writing this amazing book, for sharing your wisdom with all of us. And I really appreciate you coming on your own podcast, letting me interview you about this book. But seriously, folks, I am super excited about this book, and you should go to raisinggoodhumansbook.com and buy like 20 copies each and keep them in your purse to just hand out to unsuspecting strangers.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. While you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.